You're on 88.9 Win FM.
Win FM Community Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the Arts Hour. I'm Samantha Napier, and I'm joined once again by our fabulous Tanya Bird and our incredible producer, Nicole. As we host the Romance Here Hour on Win FM, welcome this morning, ladies. I need a coffee, I think.
Hello, how is everyone?
Pretty good.
Not enough caffeine in my system yet, but yeah, it's really good.
Clearly.
So we've got another great show for you today. We'll be chatting about the pros and cons of traditional and independent publishing with Australian historical author Kim Kelly. Tanya, you were particularly excited about this interview.
I sure was. This was a real fangirl moment for me. To be honest, I'm quite surprised I made it through the interview without giggling or crying. So go me. Yeah, we had a great chat, so that's coming up soon.
And you were telling me during the week that you also read your very first sports romance.
I did. I'll let you know how that went later on.
Okay, great. So why don't we kick it off with a bit of Jason... How do you say that name?
Jason Mraz.
Oh, yeah. Can I show my age anymore? How do you spell his last name? How do you say that?
All these young names, young people, yes. I don't know.
Tried to beat you, but you're so hot that I melted. I fell right through the cracks, and now I'm trying to get back. Before the cool done run out, I'll be giving it my bestest, and nothing's gonna stop me but divine intervention. I reckon it's again my turn to win some or learn some. I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait. I'm yours. Well, open up your mind and see like me. Open up your plans and damn, you're free. Look into your heart and you'll find love, love, love. Listen to the music of the moment, maybe sing with me. A la peaceful melody. It's your godforsaken right to be loved, 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 loved. So I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait, I'm sure. There's no need to complicate. Our time is short, this is our fate. I'm yours. Checking my tongue in the mirror and bending over backwards just to try to see it clearer. My breath fogged up the glass, and so I drew a new face and laughed. I guess what I'm saying is there ain't no better reason to rid yourself of vanity and just go with the seasons. It's what we aim to do. Our name is our virtue. I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait, I'm sure. There's no need to
open up your mind and see
like
me. Open up your plan today.
It's short,
it into your heart
cannot wait. I'm yours. No, I
do the music in the moment. Come and dance with me.
No more, no more.
It's your God. have a cigarette right to be lonely. I'm sure no need to open up your mind and see like me. Open up your plans and then you'll be sure. Well, look into your heart and you'll find
Win FM, helping you get through the day.
Welcome back to the Romance Hour. So Sam, we're chatting about the pros and cons of traditional and independent publishing today. You're traditionally published. Why don't you tell us about your experience and why that was the right path for you?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I don't know many indie publishing people, so I guess my... And to be honest, I don't know many traditionally published people. I mean, sound like, yes, just me and the...
all the big...
The literature world. We're just talking about traditional publishing. No. I don't know. I guess I have mentioned that I went to Fiona McIntosh's masterclass, and she did talk about indie and traditional, but we also had the chance to pitch to HarperCollins. So obviously we all took advantage of that opportunity, and... As I think I mentioned last week, I was asked to submit something, so that was my opportunity. And I guess because it luckily turned out that I was offered something, that it I went that way, and it just felt right because I wasn't that confident in my writing, and as it turned out, I had still a lot to learn about marketing and I guess growing a base behind you, and a sort of community as well, which I'm still kind of working out. So that felt right to me. But talking to you is really interesting because, well, you're going to tell us how that felt so right to you. And now that I talk to you, I'm like this, oh, this little light bulb's going off in my head going, because it also, indie sounded so much like a lot of work. Not the traditional wasn't a lot of work, but you do hand it over. It's like giving your baby over at family daycare or something and then them handing it back with it vomited and can you just make everyone want to love your child now?
And you're like, can you pretty it up?
Okay, thanks. Yeah. that's sort of my path. I hope that made somewhat sense.
Yeah, no.
Traditional
it does.
Publishing. But you tell us all about your
Yeah, well, it's as I mentioned last week when we did our introductions, it is something that I fell into. But I also have nothing to compare it to. Like, indie's all I know. I've been indie from the beginning. I'll tell you something, though. I honestly believe I wouldn't be an author today if it were not for indie publishing.
Mm.
I don't think any publisher would have touched my first book. Not because, you know, I'm such a terrible writer or anything, but purely because it didn't fit neatly into a genre. It really was a sort of blend of genres. It was also too long and too violent. So many things. And I doubt very much that I would have written another book after being rejected multiple times. I didn't have the self-confidence back then to try again. I would have believed I wasn't a good enough writer, and I probably would have believed that for the rest of my writing life. I published that story myself with nothing to lose at that point, and readers really liked it.
Did you read a lot of indie publishing?
To be honest, when I began indie publishing, I wouldn't have known whether what I was reading was indie or traditionally.
Okay.
It's not like independently published books have a big stamp on them, you know. So
you read a lot online.
Yeah, I read a lot of ebooks.
Yeah.
And listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't think I really, you know, knew back then the difference. And I think now the quality of independently published books has come along so much that I think most readers would struggle to tell the difference between the two.
Yeah. So, oh, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my first book has its fair share of bad reviews. Like a lot of first books, and I'm sure if I went back now, there's certainly things I would do differently. And I probably would have invested more money into it had I known that it would become my job. But you know, at the time I was you know, a stay-at-home mum, and I was just trying to make a little bit of money doing copywriting and stuff like that. So yeah, but I'm incredibly grateful that independent publishing is a thing. I'm a big advocate for people having control over their intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm not a huge fan of gatekeepers. I don't believe that readers need to be protected from bad art, in inverted commas. Yeah, I think anyone should be able to tell their story if it's something that they genuinely want to do and they have, you know, and it's a dream of theirs, then why not? Anyone should be able to share their story. And that's what reviews are for. I think bad books sink and good ones rise to the top, regardless of whether they're independently published or traditionally published. So yeah, I think we have to give readers a bit of credit that they can, they're quite capable of downloading a free sample of an ebook and deciding for themselves whether they think it's a voice that they'd like, a story that they'd like, and a quality of writing that they would, you know, stick with. So yeah. But yeah, having said that, I think being independent isn't a license to be lazy or cheap. You have to invest in your book in the same way that a publisher would. And as I said before, I made that mistake with my first book. I didn't have money for a good editor, a good cover designer. I didn't have money to market anything. I didn't know anything. So it's hard, and I understand why people can't always afford to invest in the beginning. But yeah, now my experience is quite different. This is not just my passion, it's my business. If it's not successful, I'll have to go and get a real job. So that's my motivation for making it work.
Well, that's interesting what you say about a good editor, because, and gatekeepers, because for me, I handed over the book and then got some editing notes. And, you know, she was a very good editor. And also then you're saying, you know, with the cover and things like that, you obviously had a say in what it looked like. And
yeah.
See, I got a picture. I mean, I love my cover, but
yeah,
I got a picture and I'm like, oh. It was quite interesting because in my mind, I had, I mean, I'm not a book cover designer. I didn't think I was ever going to design the book.
Yeah.
But when it came back, I'm like, oh, okay. And that makes sense. It's bright. My cover of Dating the Alphabet is bright red and it actually stands out. And I'm like, oh, that looks really good. And one of the storylines in mine is that she's the manager of a theatre restaurant. So they've done a theatre mask. Now, I would never, ever have thought of that, but somebody has read my blurb, got, I think they read a few chapters, and then they have got a concept of your book and then come up with a cover. And I'm like, that's really interesting, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
And it was, I remember saying, oh, can I thank them? I really just wanted to talk to them, not to, I just was like, how did you come up with that? Like,
yeah.
Because to me, it's not something they would ever do.
Yeah.
But you're saying you're actually quite involved in the process of.
Yeah, I think to an extent, I think you have to invest in really in professionals who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then I think you have to trust those people, because at the end of the day, I'm not a cover designer. I'm not a graphic designer.
Mm.
So I can say, you know, yes, I like that and no, I don't like that. But I think if you start to get, if you start to push in certain directions, like at the end of the day, you know, you need to let them do their job.
Oh, so. Yeah, for sure. Otherwise, yeah. You get also a name for yourself that you're...
Yeah. Don't work with her. She's high maintenance.
Yeah.
But the good thing about being independent is if you get a cover and you, you know, you don't sell, you can play with things like that. You can say, okay, is it the cover? Put a new cover up, see if it sells better.
Yeah.
Is it the book description? Change that, update that. And if all of those things fail, then you probably need to look at the writing, which is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's great. So what about being traditionally published? Do you think that you'd... when they come running with checks, will you say, look, I'm sorry?
When I get those phone calls later today. No, I'm definitely not closed off to the possibility at all. I honestly think I could learn a lot from the process of being traditionally published, working with different editors. Yeah, having opportunities to get my books into bookstores, which is one hurdle that independent publishers face. So it's easy for us to get into all the online stores and be up there with all the traditionally published books, but bookstores is you know, a bit challenging. But yeah, in the meantime, it's just nice having an income and a way to share my stories. So I'm just happy. When I started out, I just wanted to make enough money to cover what I would make if I went back to work 3 days a week. And I've been able to do that pretty much from the beginning. So I was very, very lucky.
Oh, I think you're underplaying that. I think you've worked really hard. And it's paid off. So, and remind us again what book you're up to.
I'm just working through notes for book 9.
And I'm still on book 2. So I think independent publishing might win in that one. Well, that was great to have a little chitty chat. Nicole, what would you choose? Come on. Would you do independent or traditional?
If you suddenly became an author today.
When you wrote that book about the two astonishing women that you worked with in radio.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
How they changed your life.
I was going to say that 50 Shades fan book she's working on. But let's go with that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess when I was little, I would have said traditional publishing because that was all that I thought existed.
Okay,
but
now that
I'm older.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, but you know, now that I'm older and, you know, the internet is such a big deal and, you know, online stores are such a big thing, I think, you know, I would like dip my toe in that water and just kind of see what happens, especially because I'm usually very embarrassed of my work and I don't really want people to know about it. So I think if I did indie, it would be really easy to like hide from my family,
just kind of slide in,
put it on the, like, they don't know what the internet is. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to find out. So yeah, I think I would probably try that avenue as like
as a little test.
Yeah,
and then if it didn't work out, you could just quietly
withdraw. Yeah, exactly. Safe face, no one would know, like, it'll be fine. Yeah.
Unless it became a bestseller and they're like, Dad.
Yeah.
That truckload of money at the front door. Well, got something to tell you.
Is that how it works for you? You just had a truckload of money show?
Yeah, they just follow me around. I'm like, there's enough already. Jeez.
There's only so much money one girl can have.
I think I've already told you that HarperCollins, I have contributed to their staple supply.
You did.
Quite. Yeah.
You did tell me that. Yeah.
You're welcome, HarperCollins.
Yeah, I hope it was a good quality staple.
Yes, I hope so too. Because when I pitched the second book, they were like this, hang on, what? Hey, just look at your staple collection. You were right there. No, but that's great. It's great for any author, anyone who's got a dream of writing, that there's all these avenues for us here.
There is. Yeah, definitely.
And we're going to go to a song. So we're going to hopefully go to Selena Gomez. Oh, Gomez is up. I'm really slamming it on
person.
The... Yes. Gomez's song. Lose You to Love Me. Oh, my God. Do I sound like a 60-year-old grandfather today?
The world and I fell for it. I put you first and you adored it. Set fires to my forest and you let it burn. Sang off key in my chorus, 'cause it wasn't yours. I saw the signs and I ignored it. Rose colored glasses are distorted. Set fire to my purpose. You got off in the hurting when it wasn't yours. you'll turn me down and I'll show. And soon the moons you replace us, like it was easy, made me think I deserved it. In the thick of healing, world and I fell for it. I put you first and you adored it. Set fires to my forest and you let it burn. Sing off key in my chorus.
Welcome back to the Romance Hour here on the Arts Hour. There's so many hour.
I know.
No romance show on the Arts Hour. I'm really killing it, slaying it today.
I think it is the Romance Hour on the Arts Hour.
We're obsessed with 60 minutes, let's just say that.
We should change that, I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, in more exciting news, what we're doing here is we're talking to Kim Kelly, who you introduced a little bit before, but if we listen to the interview, Tanya gives us more information.
Excellent.
So today we're very excited to be joined by Kim Kelly. Kim is the author of 9 novels exploring Australia and its history. Her stories shine a bright light on some forgotten corners of the past and tell the tales of ordinary people living through extraordinary times. A striking characteristic of Kim's writing is her ability to lead readers with warmth and lyrical charm into difficult terrain, exploring themes of bigotry, class conflict, disadvantage and violence in our shared history, issues that resonate through the social and political landscape of Australia today. A widely respected book editor and literary consultant by trade, stories fill her every day, most nights too, and it's love that fuels her intellectual engine. Love between lovers, friends, strangers, love of country, love of story. In fact, she takes love so seriously, she once donated a kidney to her husband to prove it and also to save his life. Originally from Sydney, today Kim lives on a small rural property in central New South Wales, just outside of the tiny gold rush village of Millthorpe, I hope I pronounced that right,
yep.
Where the ghosts are most friendly and her grown sons regularly come home to graze. Welcome to the Romance Hour, Kim.
Hi, Tanya, and hi, Sam. It's lovely to be here.
We're very excited. Firstly, well done on donating a kidney to your husband. That is quite the expression of love.
Yeah, it was pretty massive.
Yeah.
I remind him of it regularly. It's good for matrimonial arguments.
Yes. Very wise. And also congrats on your latest release, Walking. It's getting really good reviews from readers.
Oh, thanks, Tanya. Yes, it's always a little bit nerve-wracking when a book first comes out. I kind of put my blinkers on and pretend it's not happening for the first couple of weeks, and I'm still in that space.
Yeah, I knew the feeling. So we're really excited to chat with you today, not only because you're the perfect person to weigh in on this topic, but also because I'm a personal big fan of your book. Mm-hmm. I was telling Sam the other day there were 2 books that I read in my early 20s that really cemented my love of historical love stories, and they were The Bronze Horseman by Paulina Simons and Black Diamonds by yourself.
Oh wow, Black Diamonds.
Yeah.
Oh, so how beautiful.
I have the original yellow cover version on my bookshelf.
Wow.
It's a beautiful book. So Well done, you.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, that's okay. Sure. Well, we have limited time. As you know, this is an enormous topic, so let's dive in. We thought it would be interesting to speak with you because you're a hybrid published author, so an author who's been both traditionally and independently published, and just chat to you about the pros and cons of each. Maybe you could start by just telling us what prompted you to publish independently.
Well, it was really my old backlist titles had been, you know, sort of let go by two different publishers, actually, Black Diamonds with HarperCollins, and then later on it was This Red Earth by Penn Macmillan. And I knew, I'm in a bit of a strange space in a way, because my books have a little bit of a longer shelf life through the library system. So while, you know, everybody knows, you know, most Australian novels are a bit blink and you'll miss it on the shelves of Kmart and the chains and what have you, and you've really got that sort of 6 month window to get your books out there and get yourself so phenomenally well known that they're going to publish, you know, 10 more books. That doesn't happen for most of us, and it certainly didn't happen for me.
Yeah.
But I knew that those books still had a readership, and I would get, particularly for Black Diamonds, I'd get about, you know, sort of half a dozen of done requests every year. Oh, where can we get the paperback? But the paperback wasn't available. So I was in a position where a friend in the industry helped me out to get my rights back on my backlist titles. And so I was in a position to experiment with, well, what would it be like if I put those books out myself. And it was just an experiment. I work in the industry as a book editor, and I've been working in Australian publishing for 24 years now, so I had that curiosity anyway as to, oh, well, you know, what happens here if I do this? And so I went to a publishing consultant who was Joel Naum, and he helped me put these backlist titles out, and it was a really kind of, well, I wouldn't say it was an easy process, but it was certainly interesting, and it worked. It gave those backlist titles a new little bit of life, and it put them up for availability to be reordered in the library system, which was something I hadn't considered. But, you know, well, books in the library system, particularly Black Diamonds, being, it's its 13th year of being a book in the world this year. And, of course, you know, books wear out, especially in the library system. They disintegrate, these beautiful paper things, and libraries need to reorder them if there's a readership there. And I had no idea that that would be one of the effects of doing this, but it's worked out really well. And of course, you know, ebooks chug along, but I hadn't considered that the print book would be so important to me.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70. Baby, my heart could still fall out.
memory fades. And the crowds don't remember my name. When my hands don't play the strings the same way, I know you will still love me the same. Cause honey, your soul could never grow.
FM Community Radio, broadcasting from the Victoria University at Werribee.
Welcome back to the Romance Hour. Yeah, so that first part of the interview was really interesting with Kim Kelly. So let's hear what she had to say next.
What are some of the advantages, do you think, of being traditionally published?
I think the big one for, especially for any author starting out who don't, as I did, have any editorial background, I think the big one is always going to be that editorial expertise that you're going to get by having a major publisher bringing your titles into the world. They're going to be, you know, sort of put through that editorial machinery with a, you know, hopefully fairly fine tooth comb, and you will learn so much about your own craft simply from the practical experience of being edited in that way.
Yeah.
And of course, and I think that's sort of very nourishing for you as an artist to go through that level of experience, which you don't have to pay for, of course, because the publisher is picking up the tab on that. I mean, there are other advantages too that are less easy to define. I think a lot of people are still really attached to, you know, the kudos and cachet that comes from having your book published by a major publisher. I think that's a fairly perennial thing. And then there's also the marketing power that the bigger publishers have as well. But that doesn't necessarily mean that because your book has been picked up by a major publisher that you're going to be smiled upon marketing-wise within that particular publishing company. Very often with debut Australian authors or Australian authors who are maybe three or four books into their career, as I was, the marketing falls away and the in-house machinery decides that your book isn't going to be one that they're going to push anyway. So you end up in a position where you know, you've had the wonderful editorial experience, your book is out there, but then it kind of drops like a stone into the market. That happens over and over again. I've had a bit of a mix of experiences with traditional publishing like that, but yes, when it works though, and you know, we've had some wonderful examples of new Australian titles, particularly debut authors, with the major publishers really getting behind them, getting the marketing in there, getting the books out to readers in a, you know, broad and enthusiastic way, and it really works. That's something that's quite magical, you know, when it happens. It's lovely to see. But it doesn't happen that often.
Helping you get through the day on 88.9 Win FM.
Win FM!
Okay, welcome back. We just wanted to finish up by asking you a question, drawing on your experience as an editor. What are some of the common mistakes that you see independently published authors making, or some of the pitfalls that perhaps they could avoid?
Oh, that's a very good question. And it's kind of varied as well. I think one of the really basic ones, and you've probably heard this a lot, that a lot of independent authors who haven't had a connection to the book industry or editing of any kind often need a refresher, and maybe an intensive refresher, on basic things of grammar and expression and the sorts of things that can subtly drag a book down, like clunky dialogue, info dumps, which I was, you know, despite having an editorial background, I was good at the info dump when I first started. And things like little repetitions, for example, you know, you've mentioned your character's name 20 times in chapter one. Why did you do that? You know, the reader knows that, you know, your character is called Joe Bloggs. Those little fine detail, grammar or expression or little copy edit tricks are really worthwhile learning, not only because it will save you money in editorial fees later down the track, but because they're important to your craft. If, you know, your main goal as a writer is to communicate to the reader in not just as workmanlike a way, but in as magical way as possible, so that the reader sort of seamlessly drifts into your story and becomes immersed in the world that you've created. You don't want those little things to be pulling the reader out of the spell that you want to create. And there's a lot of hard work that goes into magic, as anyone knows. You've got to learn those tricks. Do as many courses on grammar and expression as you can afford or find. I think that's a big one, because your imagination, what you have to say, will follow that after you've learned the basics. You know, your specialness will shine even more after you've learned those things. But I think the other big thing that I have seen quite a lot over these 20 years, and not just from independent authors, but authors who, you know, submit to publishers, it's a problem that exists in all areas, and that's the writer who wants to write because they just want to be a writer. They just want to see their name on the cover of a book. It's a kind of a vanity sort of exercise. You know, I am a special person. I am going to write this book and I am going to sell 10,000 copies. There are so many people who hold that view out there, that writing is something that's a money-making exercise, or it's a route to fame and fortune of some kind. Very few of those writers ever succeed. And if you really want to do this thing, do it because you love it and because you really have something that you want to say to readers. And that's your path to success, not necessarily in riches, but in touching other people's lives with what it is you have to say. That's the magic of telling stories, writing books. If you don't have that, then you're not going to have that kind of X factor that sells a book anyway. So go and find something else to do.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think there's far easier ways to get rich than via novels. So, and same with getting famous. So, yeah, you've got to absolutely love the craft, don't you?
Yeah, and have respect for your reader, whoever that reader might be at the end, whether you're somebody who's got one story to tell and you're only ever going to have 100 readers, or if you're going to strike it big and have millions of readers throughout the world. Respect your reader, absolutely, every time.
Oh, I love that. Well, we could chat to you all day about publishing, but we should probably keep our producer, Nicole, happy and wrap it up. But before you go, where can people find out more about you and your book?
Oh, I have a website, kimkellyauthor.com, and my books are all available at all the regular places, Book Depository, Booktopia, Amazon, etc., etc. I'm all over the place. I get around. Yeah. Oh, and your library, and your local library as well, in paperback and audiobooks. They're all available.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Romance Hour, Kim.
Thank you, Tanya and Sam. It's been lovely being here.
So I absolutely loved that chat with Kim, as you probably figured out. She made some really good points about being, about her indie journey being quite unique because of her traditional roots. And I think that's a really important thing for new writers to understand. It's a lot of work when you're starting out. There's a lot to learn outside of the craft. So you definitely don't choose independent because you think it's going to be easier, because it's not. It also falls on you as an author and business person to find good mentors, editors, designers, and as we chatted about before, put a lot of trust in those people. So I think Kim's point about marketing in a way that's comfortable and right for you as a person is really good too. One of the main marketing tools I use is my email list. Mm-hmm. So every fortnight I send out an email that contains a personal update, usually a story about the kids, a writing update, a little section that I call What's Floating My Boat, where I talk about what I'm reading, watching, listening to, eating, drinking. So it's usually like the latest wine that I'm drinking or something like that, usually in large quantities. So I'll let readers know if I have a new release or a sale or a promo of some kind or some freebies.
Yeah.
But I'm not generally very salesy because that's just not me.
Mm.
So like Kim, I prefer to connect with readers in other ways. I prefer to make them laugh and give value, even if that's just a small story about the kids that, you know, someone might think, well, that made me laugh for 2 seconds. So book sales, and I think the sales of the books come naturally from that relationship. So people have that trust in you as, you know, as a person, and then they naturally go on, you know, to buy from there.
Yeah.
I do run Facebook ads, but again, that's for my free book. So I'm not asking people to buy all the time. I'm saying, hey, try this for free, and if you like it, there's more available. But you know, I'm not pushing them. They'll naturally, some will like the first book, others will leave scathing reviews and, and send me hate mail, and no, that's not quite that bad. But those who love it will generally then go on and buy the rest of the series, and they become like very loyal readers, which is awesome.
That's
what
amazing.
What more could I want? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can add that from traditional, HarperCollins actually had a day for us for marketing. So they brought in a team from Sydney. I can't remember who they were, but they were very good, and it really opened my eyes to things that I guess I didn't even know. I should have known, but I didn't know, which was a lot of blogs. I mean, you're doing your own, but contributing to other people's blogs. And that was a good way to get out there and research what people were doing. And
like a blog tour, or is that?
Do blog tours. Yeah, they organised. There was a group of about 4 writers, and we do a blog tour, and that was good in itself in that it made me write. I came up with, I remember on my wall there was a list. I had to have 6, so I had to have one that was personal, why I wrote the book, what inspired the book. a funny one.
Yeah.
One that was maybe a, not sad, but had a bit more depth to it, my funny one.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the other two. I think they were just more about maybe, you know, the journey of publishing. And I think the other one was something about what I'd learned. So
okay.
Once I'd used that, I'd try and replace that blog. I'd write something new for that particular heading. So when I would approach a blog, there was like a women's online magazine in England that I got into, that was really great. I'd say to them, I'd sort of look at what their content was and say, oh, you know, I can offer you a 400-page, Jesus, no one would take that. Oh, no thanks.
Full-length novel all about yes. me.
I just whipped something up last night, 400 pages. No, a 400-word blog about, and just give them like a sentence about, I think one was my life in a yellow skirt, because it was in the book, it's about the character manages a theatre restaurant, and I've worked as Snow White for 2 years in a theatre restaurant. I had to wear a yellow skirt. And
which I love about you. I just find that so fascinating.
Yeah, so, and, you know, the fact that I would never wear a full-length yellow skirt ever again in my life, but I wore this thing for 2 years. So it was that was a good discipline on my behalf, and I always thought that's a good idea to have, because if someone says, yeah, you can contribute to my blog, what have you got? And you're like,
yeah.
I've got something to go. Here's
yeah.
something to go. So that was a good takeaway, I think, from my thing, and that was from the author marketing day they gave us.
Yeah.
So that was good.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and Kim there made some really good points as well. I mean, that's amazing to come from traditional and then cross over and be even more successful, really.
Yeah.
And learn and keep going. So.
And to get the rights back for her books and stuff, which, you know, lot of traditional published authors are doing now. They sort of taking the reins, which is, you know, it's good for them. Like it's good to have that control. I mean, you're the brains behind it all, and your stories. So
yeah, I've never heard of that before, but obviously it does happen. So
yeah,
can I just add? I might be Nicole and I are joining the fangirl movement of Kim Kelly. Yes.
Totally. Sorry. Yeah.
I did put you on the spot.
Yeah.
No, that was super cool. Yeah.
So excellent. So that was a great interview again this week. Now why don't we go to another great woman, Jessica Malboy, with We Got Love.
Why do we always feel like we need to try? Why do we believe that we need to be somebody else to feel alive? Why do we keep making the same mistakes and believing that it won't make a difference if we try to break away? Cause we got love. I won't throw my hands up to surrender.
WinFM Community Radio, broadcasting from the Victoria University at Werribee.
Welcome back. Now, we did hint before that Tanya's going to give us a book review about a sports romance, something I've never heard of. So let's hear all about that.
Yeah, so I read quite widely in the romance genre, as we've talked about before. So I've been wanting to try a sports romance for a while now. So Longshot by Kennedy Ryan is the first book in her Hoop series. It's a standalone forbidden love story, which is one of my favourite romance tropes. The book also won the Contemporary Reader Award last year in the US. Yeah. So I thought it would be a good place to start.
Yeah.
It was honestly the best call ever because I absolutely loved this book. The prose was phenomenal. The characters lived and breathed, and the dialogue was really sharp. So the story centers around two NBA ball players and Iris Dupree, a smart, beautiful, and determined young woman. Caleb Bradley is a star college basketball player and Iris's boyfriend, but a chance meeting with August West, a fellow rival of Caleb's, changes everything. One encounter with August leaves them with lots of what-ifs for years to come. So the story actually spans over a number of years. And every time they cross paths, their connection solidifies a little bit more until it's too strong to deny. But Iris's circumstances make it too dangerous to leave Caleb. And I was worried that a plot centered around basketball might be a bit much for non-sporty me, but it really wasn't at all. It did have some really cute basketball references that made me grin like a mad woman. There was this line that said, if you were mine, Iris, there would be no doubt what position you'd hold in my life. You'd be center. I'd play you at the five. And I was just like, oh my God. It was just one of those really sweet moments. And I was like, look at me, all basketballery. So these two were just gorgeous together. And so yes, it was a sports romance, but it was actually a lot more than that. There are some really heavy themes that are dealt with, like domestic violence and postnatal depression, but it's all handled with care. So yeah, this is an incredible love story, but it's most definitely Iris's story. It's her story of survival and growth. And yeah, I loved every brutal minute of it, so I highly recommend it.
Well, that's really interesting. I wonder, do you think marketing herself, I guess, as sports romance, I mean, obviously she's not finding a problem because she just won an award. That helped, that always helps. But do you think that would be hard?
No, because it's such a massive genre at the moment. And I was looking at a report. I'm trying to think who put the report out. Doesn't matter anyway. But they were looking at romance trends and predictions for this year. And sports romance is actually on the rise. And I think that's due to authors like, Boys of Brayshaw High. I can't remember the author. But those types of romance, authors like LJ Shan, who've come out with their really popular All Saints High series and things like that. And I think that's really boosting the genre at the moment. So yeah, if you're looking to get in, that might be a
So you're
going to
switch
to
it up?
Can you imagine me writing sports romance? Like, yeah, and there was a ball and stuff. Yeah, I'd be hopeless. I wouldn't do it justice, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think that I mean, I played netball, but when you said
netball.
Central, that is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, mixed netball romance, that could be a thing, right?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. No, the bibs smack together, and I could feel his, nah, it's not working. No one would buy that. Nobody would want to read that. I don't want to be detrimental to the whole genre itself.
Yeah.
So, well, that's good. What have we got for a book review next week?
I haven't thought that far ahead, but I will be all over it by then.
I should really stick to the script when asking you a question, shouldn't I? Nicole, maybe would you like to book review next week? I'll stick to the script.
Yeah, you'll speak.
Clearly.
Maybe it's your turn.
Yeah, don't say I don't put myself up.
Yeah, yeah.
Just handball. There's your sports reference right there.
Handballed.
There we go.
Well done.
Have you got some kind of weird, what do you call them, sound? when I say, there's my sports reference. Like we're on breakfast radio. Alrighty, well, that's our time up for today. Big thanks to our fabulous producer, Nicole. Go on, Nicole. You're dripping. This apparently is a teenage reference for really being good, because that does sound a bit gross.
Yeah.
She's looking really good. Yeah. So thanks again for being a wonderful producer. Kim Kelly, our guest, who we're all now fangirls. And we'll be hosting the next Arts Hour next. We're having a week off, but we're coming back with a vengeance and with a special guest. This spare mic will not be spared next time. It will be with Ali Sinclair.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. Yeah.
We'll all love her. She's fun. And she's just down the freeway. So she'll be
probably far more confident than all of us.
Yeah, probably. You'll probably by the fourth week we'll get requests. Can you just leave Ali
and
just lock the others out? Yeah. I know, Nicole will have to be here. That just leaves you and me, Tanya, out the front.
Nicole and Ali show. Yes.
Take it over.
Yeah. So have a great couple of weeks. We'll be back on the 22nd, I believe it is.
Yes, that sounds Sundays. About right.
Yes, yep. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us here on The Romance
Thanks,
Hour.
Everyone. Bye.
Win FM Community Radio.
Turkish land border Saturday in a fresh flare-up of tensions over migrants seeking access to European Union territory. Olivia Chan of Reuters has more.
A Reuters correspondent in the area said the projectiles were coming from Turkish territory and being fired towards Greek police near the border crossing. Some tear gas was also being fired by Greek police. Thousands of migrants have been trying to get into Greece, an EU member state, after Turkey said last week it would no longer try to keep them as agreed in 2016 with the EU in return for billions of euros in aid. Greek officials say authorities have stopped more than 1,000 attempts to cross the border in the last 24 hours.
That's Olivia Chan of Reuters. U.S. Democratic presidential candidates Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders spent Saturday campaigning as they prepare for a showdown in several states next week. Speaking in St. Louis, Missouri, the former vice president said his campaign is for those who feel like they've been left behind.
For all those who have been knocked down, counted out, left behind, let me say to you, this is your campaign.
Senator Sanders told supporters in Dearborn, Michigan, his diverse campaign best represents America.
The very first thing we do is we bring people together and we stop the divisiveness in this country. Every person in this room, doesn't matter if you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, whatever you may be, you have the same dreams and the same aspirations.
Biden and Sanders face off Tuesday in Idaho, Mississippi, Missouri, Washington State, North Dakota, and Michigan. For more on these stories, be sure to visit voanews.com. You can also follow us on the...